Hi, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we've got a dynamic hour for you, and I invite you to join us. I'm going to give out our toll-free numbers where later on in the hour you'll have an opportunity to call in if you so desire. So get that pad of paper and pen handy because it's going to be something you're always going to want to have whenever you listen to the show. Here are our toll-free numbers for later on in the hour, 877-876-5227, that's for U.S. of A. Canada is 888-810-8322. And then we also have a direct line of 530-876-9146. Today's guest is a fascinating man. He, along with other business associates, have put together some material that I think for anyone who is of a business mindset, has an entrepreneurial flair, is concerned about what's going on in the marketplace, and gee whiz, does the little guy have a chance? Well, my guest, John Weiser, is a man that's going to address some of these questions for us today. John, welcome to the show.
I'm delighted to be with you, Donna.
Well, I'm very excited about this, and I'll tell you why. When I got your book, it was just a short time before I got your book, and I always read material that's given to me. And when I was reviewing it, I thought, people need to know about this. We have so much negative conversation about how the small business in America doesn't have a chance, and there is all of this, what I call a very defeated, gee whiz, the global economy is just going to literally knock us off our feet, we don't have a chance. In your book that you put together along with your other associates, Michelle, Steve, and Jessica, I think you've done a very good job of presenting perspectives that the average person can't have. John, before we get into my asking questions of you, I wanted to be sure that my listeners know a little bit about you and your background. You're a founding partner in the firm of Brody, Weiser, and Burns. You have long been considered an expert on using business strategies to achieve business as well as social goals. You write continuously, you've done a lot of reports and books, and you've also helped to create, manage, and evaluate a range of corporate community partnerships, including many that we're going to be talking about in the book. Why is business such a passion for you, John?
Well, Donna, if I can go back a little bit, I'm the oldest of eight children, and it's always been part of my life to be responsible and to sort of feel that it's important to help others as a part of a big family. You know, your mother's always saying to you, you got to help others, you got to look out for your brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to business school, I was fascinated by the fact that business is really coming to be one of the most powerful forces, not only in the U.S., but globally. But many people weren't really focusing on the fact that business could really be a force for social change. It could be something that could be really positive, as well as, of course, something that could be negative. It's a marvelous tool, and it's tremendously powerful. And so I get excited about ways to both create business success and also to, help to make the world a better place.
This, to me, is an attitude that is not just optimistic, but is optimum, because I feel that if you look at any economy anywhere in the world, if you do not have a healthy business environment, that economy basically is going to stay in the toilet. It just isn't, excuse my description, but I mean, it's just not going to cut it.
Right. And you know, it's important for businesses to be profitable. It's important for economies to be vibrant, but it's also important for them to be inclusive. You can't be a successful business and be enduring if you're not profitable. But I also think you can't be enduring if the world around you is collapsing and you're not willing to sort of step in and help a little bit.
I agree. I think it is very important to have a win-win attitude. Now, let's cover a couple of points. Your book that you have, that you've written with your associates, to me, it just points out so many variables that I think is so valuable for the business environment. Talk to us about the Ford Foundation and their CI initiative in 1995. I really like this. This was right in the very first part of your book.
Yes. The Ford Foundation is a national, international foundation that works at helping to improve the lives of humanity, particularly folks who are lower income or who are disadvantaged in some way. And back in 1995, they realized that business was and is going to be a growing force for global change. And they also realized that government was stepping back a little bit, and in many places quite a ways, from its former role of sort of, you know, orchestrating whatever happened in economies. And so they became very interested in finding ways that businesses and communities could work together to improve both. And they spent quite a bit of time. I was a consultant to that initiative, and my co-author, Michelle Kahana, was the program officer for that initiative. And they spent quite a bit of time, you know, making grants to nonprofits and communities to help them work with businesses. Some of them went extremely well. Some of them went really quite poorly. And the book is the result of looking backwards over that eight-year initiative to try to understand, well, what was it that distinguished situations where things went well from situations where things went really poorly? And that's what sort of formed the basis of the work that went into the book.
There's a statement that I found very profound in your book, and it has to do with philanthropy in business and how total corporate philanthropy in business was $12 billion in 2004, while total purchasing from minority-owned businesses in the same year was $87 billion.
That's right.
Those numbers boggle the mind.
Those people who are not familiar with the corporate world don't realize how tremendous the resources are that corporations can bring when they hire, when they purchase, when they sell, when they invest. And if you can get to that part of the corporation as opposed to its charitable part, you can be, you know, 100 to 1,000 times have more impact. So, for example, if you look at Fannie Mae, you know, Fannie Mae, of course, has a foundation and does very good work, but Ford Foundation and Fannie Mae and the community bank called Self-Help worked to develop a new way to provide mortgages to low-wealth individuals, and that unleashed over a period of 5 years about $2 billion of mortgages that wouldn't have been available otherwise. So no matter how much money Fannie Mae gives away through its charities, it's really a drop in the bucket compared to what it can make available when it actually helps to make loans available to low-income or low-wealth individuals.
Now, you also talk about Citigroup, which is huge.
Yes.
Absolutely huge. They did something unique in 2001. Tell us about that. Well, has to do with the checkless checking account.
Yes. Citigroup was very interested. Let me give the listeners a perspective. The market for remittances, that remittance is when a person is working in one country and sends money to a person in another country. The market for remittances is huge and growing. And Citibank saw that this market was primarily dominated by Western Union and MoneyGram, and that they charge about 4%, 5% of the total to make the transfer happen.
Mm-hmm.
And Citibank was very interested in trying to get into the market, but it realized that it had to change the game. You couldn't beat Western Union at its own game. It already had 70% of the market. People knew about it. It was reliable. It might be a little expensive, but they understood how it worked. So what Citibank realized is it had recently concluded a merger with Banamex, which is the biggest bank in Mexico, and that meant that it had an ATM network that spanned U.S. and Mexico. And so it decided that it was going to try to create a product where customers could transfer money within the Citibank system. So it created something called the Access Account. It's a new account that was aimed at immigrants, anybody who would be doing a remittance, and it's basically a debit card, checkless checking account. It's a debit card that you can use for free ATM withdrawals and deposits. You can use it for point-of-sale purchase. But most importantly, you can get a paired card with Banamex so that someone who lived in Mexico could have an ATM card that was linked to your Citibank account in the U.S., and you could transfer money for $5 for up to $3,000, as opposed to $30 or $90 for up to $3,000. So it's a tremendous savings because they have the technology in place already. and growing quite rapidly. They have about 100,000 customers currently and are adding about 8,000 a month.
Amazing. Now, you bring up a company that's located in Vermont, and this is the Green Mountain Coffee Roasters Company. And in 2004, it had sales of $137 million.
Yes.
And it is fair trade certified. They say it's the fastest growing product line in, you know, in the organic, the fair trade and organic certified community. That's a tremendous company, and that was a small company that I guess could still be considered small, but those numbers aren't small.
Well, one of the reasons we like highlighting Green Mountain is, you know, when you hear stories about companies going into an underserved market, often it is a Citibank or it is a Manpower or Fannie. These are huge companies. And people might say, well, you know, what really can a small company do? We like Green Mountain because, first of all, it is a small company, and it's a very good small company. It was rated as one of the 200 best small companies in the U.S. by Forbes for the past 3 years, from 2002 to 2004. I also liked it because they were willing to talk with us candidly about some of the difficulties. When they were trying to decide whether or not – actually, let me go back a second. The management knew about the coffee-growing regions. They understood that the decline in coffee prices was creating real hardships for the people they bought the coffee from, and they also understood that if they could find a way to brand and to certify that the coffee they were buying was in some way fairer or better than regular coffee, that people would be willing to pay a little more for it. But you had to have some way of actually certifying it. So they worked together with an organization called Transfair, which is a certification organization, and they got ready to introduce the line. But there was a lot of tension and turbulence within the company because the people who were the salespeople said, wait a second, if one of our lines is branded fair trade, what does it mean about the other lines? Are they then unfair trade or are they bad in some way? Are you going to take on a product which is then going to hurt my other products? It took them about a year of working really hard to try to figure out how to successfully launch a product that would bring them into a new market without hurting their other products or creating some kind of problems. They were able to do it, and the market just responded positively and absolutely took off. As you're saying, it grew from about 11% of their sales to 16% of their sales in a two-year period, and they're looking to have it be something like 35% of their sales a couple of years from now. So a real success story, but one that required a lot of gumption and stick-to-itiveness to make it work in a smaller company.
All right, so here we are. We've talked about a couple of companies. And for those of you who have just tuned in to the program, we're talking with John Weiser. His book is called Untapped, Creating Value in Underserved Markets. If you are of an entrepreneurial bend, then this is something you're going to want to explore so that you don't feel like you're going to get slam dunked if you want to do something in an area of business that maybe is not being covered and not being nurtured. So that's what we're discussing today. Now let's go into tapping new markets.
Mm-hmm.
That's very important, I think, for people to be aware that the low-income consumers, and I'm quoting right out of your book, typically purchase much more, as often as 30% more than their income. And that, when I read that, I highlighted it, and I went, 30% more than their income. That's quite a statement.
Yes. You have to understand, let's think about these low-income markets. You have a couple things going on. First is, of course, you do have some under-the-table activity. So you have people who are they're waiting tables, or they're mowing lawns, or they're washing dishes, and they're not reporting. But there's also actual legal ways to get money. So, for example, remember the remittances I talked about? People are getting gifts. They're getting support from their families. They're getting scholarships. They're getting government transfer payments, welfare, or Social Security, or disability. Those are all things that don't show up on your income statement when you file your tax return. Scholarships do have to be reported now, but Social Security and others don't if it's under a certain threshold. So you have lots of payments coming in to these. And for upper income areas, it's a smaller percent of the total. But for low income areas, it can be as much as 30% between the unreported income that's not legal and the unreported income that's perfectly legal and above board. It's just not reported on your tax returns.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, when someone wants to explore an untapped market, you recommend that they use information brokers and develop learning laboratories. Mm-hmm. If someone wanted to step into an arena of activity, how do these particular points have value, and how do you go about getting them?
Sure. Let's talk about information brokers, which I think is more useful for a smaller entrepreneur than the learning labs are a little expensive, and it's something that's done more for bigger companies. I'll give you an example of one that I've written about in the book, which is called Social Compact. That's a nonprofit, and it's a nonprofit which is a coalition of business leaders that is interested in helping to improve the economies of inner city. There's another one called the Initiative for Competitive Inner City, which was founded by Michael Porter, a famous strategy guru, and it's got the same message. They really want to help to improve the economies of the inner cities in the U.S. And these folks have spent a lot of time and a lot of money getting better information and making it available to you, the entrepreneur. So you can go, for example, to the website for the Initiative for Competitive Inner City, icic.org, and you can download information, for example, on customer preferences in low-income neighborhoods. So you can see, for example, Hispanic customers tend to shop more often, or African-American customers tend to buy a different brand of clothing or a different kind of jewelry. So if you're wanting a retailer and you want to get into the market, you can actually get good information about it. The Social Compact, for example, does work at trying to size the market. So they try to get better information on consumer expenditures, better information on consumer growth, so that if you want to locate in an inner-city market, you can actually get a better estimate of really how much retail sales there are. So those kinds of brokers are out there. They're being funded, and you can get to them on the web, and they can really help you to do a better job of estimating how good the market might be for your goods or services.
Now, you bring up some very good information about how consumers in underserved markets make different trade-offs in convenience, quality, features, and cost,
mm-hmm.
and that this I found interesting. Unit costs are often higher in underserved markets. And then what you can do about it is reconfigure product features, price points, and formats, develop new distribution channels in the community. And you used a term I was unfamiliar with, leapfrogging technology.
Yes.
What is that?
That's where you cut out a piece of the cost structure that your competitors have. So, for example, I'll give you two examples. One is going back to that ATM. If you have to have a brick and mortar building to do your banking services, that's much more expensive than if you're virtual, than if you have basically online and ATM. So let's go back to Citibank. Citibank just entered a partnership with 7-Eleven. Any Citibank customer can now go to the 7-Eleven, the kiosks in the 7-Eleven, and use them for Citibank business. And they can use them for free. Well, that added 5,000 ATM points to Citibank's network, which increased the Citibank network fivefold, basically overnight. That kind of using someone else's infrastructure, I call leapfrogging. You don't have to carry your whole infrastructure. You're using someone else's. And that lets you sort of leap over a whole chunk of the cost structure that otherwise makes it difficult to serve a place where the unit cost can be higher.
Well, that just is something that I think more and more is a very significant aspect mm-hmm. of dealing in business. And I think anybody that has been in business is always looking for something along those lines that can make life much more efficient for them. Now, you've got, again, so much information in your book. Let's jump forward a little bit and cover an area that has to do with accelerating product and process, and mm-hmm. also a little bit about globalization, because we have this international marketplace that is so much more powerful than ever before. Can you address those areas?
Yes. So let's talk about innovation for a bit. Let's talk about innovation in two ways. One is that in order to get into these markets, in fact, in order to be successful in business at all, you have to continually innovate. And one of the things we found interesting is that some companies were actually able to use their engagement with these low-income or low-wealth markets to develop innovations themselves. Let me talk about one example outside the U.S., and then if you'd like, I can come back into the U.S. Cemex, which is the biggest cement company in Mexico and the second largest cement company in the world, was hit very hard by the peso devaluation in the mid-90s. You may remember that the peso essentially was cut in half.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if you're trying to export cement and suddenly your cement price has doubled, it's quite hard to convince people to take it. And they decided that they were going to try to sell more in Mexico and particularly sell more into the do-it-yourself market. Now, if you've visited Mexico, you've been down by the border, you may see that there's many houses where people are essentially building themselves, and they build a room every 4, 5, 6 years. When they get the money together, they buy the materials, and they build another room on their house. And most of those are built with bricks and cement.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they sent a team of folks into the low-income neighborhoods for almost a year, watching and learning and trying to understand how do people actually go about getting the money together and financing, how do they actually buy, what do they actually do. And what they discovered, which is a tremendous innovation, was that people formed self-help groups, little co-ops, and they would each put money in, a little bit of money in each week, and then once a month, once every 2 months, someone from the group would get the pot and use it to do something important. It might be a wedding, it might be buying materials for a house, it might be sending a kid someplace, it might be paying for an emergency, medical emergency. And the social glue helped people to stay on track with actually putting money in. You know, you knew that if you didn't put money in, that Joe or Jose or Maria would come to you and say, hey, come on, we're all putting our money in. You need to put your money in too. Well, what they ended up doing was innovating and using that as the basis for a new product, which was cement and materials and advice from architects and plans all wrapped up in a bundle. And you would join this group and you'd put in what's about $14 a week for about a two-year period.
Mm-hmm.
So that $1,000 would buy you enough materials, enough advice, and enough support that you could actually build a room on your house.
Incredible.
It's been very successful. People are building rooms faster, the rooms are better, and they've expanded it. They've had about 70,000 customers at this point. So, you know, usually you think of low-income places as places where you're going to go in and do something nice for them, but in this case, they were actually able to create an innovation by engaging with them in a really serious way that they now can, you know, bring to other parts of their business. They're going to take it down other parts of Latin America, take it over to China, you know, other places where this sort of social support network really might be a popular innovation.
I think what is even more valuable about the innovation is that it's encouraging self-reliance.
Mm-hmm.
It's encouraging communication among individuals. It's encouraging an understanding of how their money, their dollars, are going to effectively work very well for them. And the business is building a wonderful rapport of mutual respect and that assistance and help. My goodness, you can't beat that combination. That really is very good because I don't know about anybody else. I can't speak for anybody else but myself, but that's how I feel about the people I take my car to. I've been with them for years. I trust them implicitly because they've earned my trust.
Yes.
And when a company does that and stands behind it, what a statement that is. That's marvelous. And that sort of goes into an aspect that you discuss in your book, Creating Value for Business and Community. Mm-hmm. I think that addresses it so well. Now, John, we're out of time. There's so many more things we could discuss. And obviously, my listeners, if they have an interest in business, if they want to know more, well, maybe you've got a friend that you would just love to be able to give them a gift of encouragement. Why not buy the book, Untapped, Creating Value in Underserved Markets. John, what is your website or contact information if people want to know more?
www.untappedbook.com.
Untappedbook.com.
Yes.
Okay, that's www.untappedbook.com. Before we close out our conversation for today, John, is there a thought that you would like to leave with my listeners regarding business?
Yes. I think that it's not only imperative, it's something where all of you out there need to understand that you can make money and you can make positive things happen. And not only that, we have to make positive things happen. Most of the growth that's going to happen over the next, say, 20 or 30 years in the world is going to happen in underserved markets. That's where the real population growth is going to happen. If we can help to make their lives productive, exciting, secure, then we can help to make a world that works for all. If we don't, then we're going to see islands of wealth in a sea of poverty, and it's going to be very difficult, even more difficult than it is now. So I'd encourage you to go out there and do good business and do well and do good as well.
Mr. Ford did that a long time ago with his little automobile. Not so little then. It was really a big deal then, but he made sure that the workers in his manufacturing facility could afford it.
Right.
Not unlike the company dealing with the cement situation in Mexico. How can we bring what we need to the average individual so that their quality of life is going to improve, that they can afford what we have to offer and can make this world a better place? John Weiser has been my guest. John, thank you very, very much. Your book, Untapped, along with your associates, Michelle, Steve, and Jessica, is an outstanding publication. Thank you again for being my guest.
It's been a real pleasure to be with you.
This is Donna Sebo. We are going to be taking a break in just a moment. Telephone lines will be open if you should like to call in. But again, go to untappedbook.com if you'd like more information about this publication and about John Weiser and his associates. And his last name is spelled W-E-I-S-E-R. This is Donna Sebo. This is an hour of mind power, and I'm so glad you're able to join me. We are going to be taking a break. When we come back, we'll have more wonderful things to share with you. Remember, you make a difference, so whatever you do, stay tuned. You've got more good stuff to add to your pile of knowledge. Donna Sebo here. We'll be back in just a moment. Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and it is a powerful day in American history, this day of September the 11th. And, of course, many people are honoring and recognizing the event of September 11th, 2001. And I wanted to take this opportunity to share something with you from one of our listeners. Her name is Janet, and I really appreciated the email she sent me actually this morning. And by the way, for those of you that have special stories, if you have a recipe, anything like that you'd like to share with me, send it along to me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com. That's DELPHI international.com. I'm always delighted to hear from you. Also, don't forget, on bbsradio.com, there is a comment section. And if you have a comment about the show, about the program, or anything that you hear, be sure to go in and let us know what you think. If you have any suggestions, if you like something, we'd love to hear from you. You make a difference. You're the reason we're doing this programming, because we want to be able to bring something to you that is going to make a difference in your life. So you've got two options there, but send me the story or anything, just like Janet did. And I always review material, and just like what she sent me today was so very timely. And I wanted to say that it was also put out in the Associated Press by Gavin Rabinowitz. And this is about how India is commemorating Gandhi's legacy. And this is how it reads. As much of the world marked September 11th by remembering the 2001 attacks on the United States, India celebrated it as a day of peace. It is the 100th anniversary of the birth of Mohandas K. Gandhi's philosophy of peaceful resistance. Art exhibitions, charity events, and tributes were staged to mark this 100th anniversary of the day that Gandhi, who at that time was a lawyer working in South Africa, joined his fellow Indians to protest a proposed law that would force Indians to carry identity documents and be fingerprinted. Now, this is what happened on that particular September 11th. It was 1906. Gandhi called on his compatriots to use nonviolent means to disobey the law, and thousands of Indians were jailed, including himself, for refusing to cooperate and burning their identity booklets. The government eventually relented and compromised with Gandhi. Now, he called his doctrine of preaching the use of nonviolent methods to strive for justice the Satyagraha, and it eventually inspired Indians to throw off British colonial rule in 1947. Now, what does that term mean? It means insistence on truth, and it's cited as an inspiration that the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., in his use of nonviolence to achieve equality for black Americans and South Africa's peaceful transition from apartheid to democracy. And there's so many people that are honoring this day in India. South Africa's visiting deputy president, Mr. Biyombo Nakuka, placed a wreath on Gandhi's main New Delhi memorial on Monday. Now, Gandhi earned the name of Mahatma, or great soul, after he returned to India to campaign for home rule and the reconciliation of all classes and religious groups. His highest and greatest achievement, according to Pran Chopra, a New Delhi-based political analyst, was bringing India's masses into the struggle for independence when previously only isolated intellectuals and small groups that used violence had been involved. He says this platform offered by Gandhi gave them an opening so they could participate in boycotts and protests. Now, Gandhi was assassinated by a Hindu nationalist in 1948 after campaigning for a reconciliation between Hindus and Muslims. And India has cast aside its socialist-style economy in recent years to firmly embrace capitalism. The leaders say Gandhi's values, which also promoted a frugal lifestyle, wearing homespun clothes and eating sparingly, are relevant. By the force of moral example and restraint in the face of vicious provocation, Gandhi and his followers were able to effect a change of heart in their oppressors. And this was a statement made by the ruling Congress Party, which called for a year of public events to mark the occasion. I want to add something to that. I had the opportunity to interview Gandhi's grandson. And this was brought about, this was about 4 years ago that I had the privilege of interviewing him. What a wonderful man he is. And he knew his grandmother and grandfather when he was quite young. And I learned to my amazement when I reviewed the material he had sent me that Mrs. Gandhi was the reason that Gandhi himself adopted the nonviolent method. That's right. Mrs. Gandhi was the inspiration for that. She was a woman. There was a profound significance in his life and in the lives of literally millions of Indian people, especially the women. She conducted one of the first marches in South Africa to protect the rights of Indian women due to certain British rulings that had been passed down that were very difficult. But maybe there will be another time I can chat with you about it. So on this day, which in the minds of so many Americans is a day that could promote a lot of anger, a lot of hate, a lot of resentment, let's keep in mind that there was a man in history, Gandhi, who said, if you want change, you have to be that you want to have changed. In other words, walk your walk. Walk the talk. Be the best you can be. Because violence does not achieve anything. It really doesn't. It just creates more havoc. So on this day, honor those that we choose to remember on this particular date of our history. It caused a lot of sadness, a lot of tears, and a lot of changes within this country of ours. But remember, we have a power as an individual that when collectively we work towards peace and we take those positions of strength and we can work in a nonviolent way, changes can affect those that maybe do want to be very destructive. And we can make a difference. We may just have to figure out a way that they would never have expected that can cause them to change their mind. Because whenever you make war on someone else, you always create havoc in your own environment. It's just something that occurs. One person made a remark to me many years ago, and I've never forgotten it. They said, anyone that's involved in a master-slave relationship. You can't be the master without also being the slave. It doesn't work any other way. And this person that told me this had worked in a prison. And they said this lesson was brought home to them because as a part of the prison guard system, they said, I realized I was just as much a prisoner of that environment as the prisoners that were locked up that I was there to guard. That it was a very, very deep awareness that I acquired from that particular level of working environment. So just something to share with you today. This is Donna Siebel. Give me a call if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Hey, we've got two toll-free numbers you can call into. If you're in the U.S., 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. If you want to call in from Canada, the telephone number to call into is 888-810-8322. That's 888-810-8322. Also, if you're calling in from anywhere else, you can call in on our direct line, which is 530-876-9146. That's 530-876-9146. Also, I want to mention to you that I am going to be visiting Alaska and also New York this month. So you can go into my website. You can check out my itinerary. Also, you can give me a call at my office, because I'm going to be available for private appointments while I'm in those different locales. I'm hoping to come into California in October as well. So you can just check that at DelphiInternational.com. That's my website. Go in. You can check out the newsletter, which will give you information. You also can see my traveling calendar and what's happening there. And don't forget, you can always reach me at my office, 800-872-8852, if you need to. I wanted to share a little bit of information that came across my desk, and I love this, especially since this is the beginning of a week. And so many times when we're getting on that beginning cycle of the week, the working week, we may not be feeling too upbeat or too positive. We're sort of wishing we had another day that we could just relax and take it easy. Well, this is about a guy named Jerry. He wasn't really a morning person, and as he was getting ready to go to work, he grabbed his paper and decided that, you know what, I think I'm going to stop at the corner latte shop here and just relax a little bit, go in a little bit earlier, and just do what I need to do. And so he did, and he made his way to the counter of this little coffee shop. And the clerk that was waiting on the customers looked like she was made of stone. She was waiting to take his money. She yawned, and she sort of mumbled the amount that Jerry was to pay her for the coffee. And he was yawning, and he paid, and he left the store, and he said, oops, I forgot my paper. He walked out with his latte, as so many of you do in the morning, and thought, oh, shoot, I left my paper on the counter. I got to go back and get it. And he said, ooh, I got to wake up here because I'm just really dragging. I'm not doing things the way I should be. So he decided to go back to the store the next morning. And while he was there, there was a gentleman at the counter with the cashier, was arguing with her, talking about how the coffee wasn't enough. Two other customers were bickering, and all kinds of things were going on. Well, we're going to find out more about what Jerry experienced at this latte shop in just a moment. We've got a telephone caller. Let's take our caller who's been waiting very patiently. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
This is Leilani, and I'm calling from Chandler, Arizona. Hi, Donna.
Hi. Where are you in Arizona?
Chandler.
Wow. Well, I'm sure that you're perking with temperatures there.
Actually, it's getting quite pleasant down here. Our weather is starting to shift,
uh-huh.
And we're starting to see fall kicking in.
My goodness.
I know.
Well,
isn't that exciting?
I think that's wonderful. Fall
is my favorite time of the year. By the way, I really like your voice.
Excuse me?
I really like your voice.
Well, I'm so glad. How'd you learn about the show?
Well, I'm also a host on BBS, but I have always been very intrigued with you, and this is the first time I've listened to your show, and I'm very impressed, Donna.
Well, thank you. That's quite a compliment. I appreciate that from a fellow host. Well, let's get down to business with you. Now, Leilani, let me ask you, will you stay on hold? Because we're going to be taking a break for a moment.
Absolutely.
Fabulous there. We'll be coming back in just a moment. I don't want to get started with Leilani and then have to interrupt her or myself. So for those of you listening, we are going to be taking calls, 877-876-5227. We're going to be coming back to Leilani. And if you're in Canada, 888-810-8322. Now, don't you go away. We've got some good things. And Leilani, we'll be back with you in just a moment. Donna Sebo here. We're coming right back. Don't go away. Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and we're going to go right back to Leilani. Leilani, let me give you my mental impression, and then you can ask me anything you like.
Fair enough.
All right. Now, first of all, there are 1, 2, 3, 4 publications that you're going to be putting together. Now, I use the word publication because one, I think, is going to be something like a column on a regular basis that's going to be put out. And then I'm looking at 2 potential books. And then the other item as a publication, I'm not quite sure how this is going to come together. It appears to be associated with some kind of an expo. I'll use that as a description. When I'm observing this activity with you, I'm seeing you feeling a bit frustrated because of technology. There will be someone that will be able to assist you to know how to use this technology so it works more effectively for you in the way and manner that makes it compatible with your pace and with your schedule. When I'm looking at the 2 books, the first book that comes out, you're not going to be especially pleased with. The second book, I think, is really going to give you exactly what you want as a result, and it will very nicely complement the first one. So you need to be patient with your small beginnings, and it's not a bad place to be because you're going to be refining within a very short period of time the objectives that you are wanting to accomplish, and I'm getting 2 to 3. It may be 2 to 3 years so that all of this comes together in the right way. Also, what I am looking at is something affecting your eyes. Now, I'm not seeing a serious illness here or physiological condition, but there is something with the eyes. It could have to do with glare. It has a fatigue patterning to it as I am experiencing it. I believe that there may be a colored lens that you could use that would allow the eyes to be more comfortable. And this could have something to do with working on a computer, doing a lot of reading, something where the light is affecting you in an unusual way. So you may find using full spectrum lighting is going to serve you very nicely. But there's something in the way of exploring and experimenting here that's going to mean a lot to you. So just be aware that those tinted glasses, you may need to experience trying out different shades to see what will work best for you. And it's just a very slight coloration, nothing real dark and oppressive as far as shadowing something. It just seems to soothe the eyes. So I don't know if it's a light yellow or a light pink. I just don't know. But I think if you research it, you're going to find you won't have the eye fatigue. What would you like to ask me in the way of a question today?
Well, it's really, thank you for the information. I appreciate that. And you're correct on my eyes. My eyes have always been very, very sensitive to light. And so I'm not able to look at a light very long. So I usually have to wear glasses to filter that out. But what I've been noticing is that my healing work has been really shifting.
All right. What is your question to me?
Well, I am feeling as though that I'm bringing in a new level of healing that's being incorporated within what I'm already doing as a healer. And I feel like it's new gifts or it's been excelled to another level. Am I making sense?
Yes, and I can tell you what's occurring. part of this is in direct relationship to the nervous system of your physical vehicle. And it is becoming stronger on levels that you have been practicing with for a number of years. You also have been very open to changing and adapting your dietary patternings. You have been more consciously aware of taking care of yourself physically.
Yes.
When you have done this, it enables the nervous system to become stronger and healthier in handling what I would call energy within the physical self. Consequently, you're going to find that this is going to get stronger and better. I would like to encourage you to explore areas like Qigong or any of the other areas that involve a different application of working with energy so that you can become more elastic, if that word is comfortable for you, where you will be able to adapt to whatever is required as it is needed easily and readily. And I think that is the reason you're seeing this shift, because of a number of things that are going on simultaneously. And this is very positive. So I would encourage you to explore some other venues that are compatible with how you are working. And I believe that you will be able to design and develop a particular technique that for some individuals will be very, very harmonious in their developing their skills. And, of course, this is part of what you're doing. You're preparing yourself for being a teacher on a very different level than what you would even dream of at this time. So all of this is coming into play. I think it's very normal. It's very natural for you. Congratulations.
Yes. Yes, it is. Thank you very much, because, you know, I've done energy work for quite some time, but what is really interesting is, you know, 3 years ago I actually developed and was a founder of the Multidimensional Healers here in Arizona. And I am watching some very profound, incredible things happening as far as shifting people's physical bodies. Some to where I walk away almost within myself, I want to disbelieve, but I'm the, you know, I've helped facilitate it and watched it unfold.
Well,
and I've noticed that that has really increased. You know, for an example, is restoring a person's eyesight or dropping a pelvic bone etherically. It's just been phenomenal, and I can feel this. These explosions have been going off in me for the past couple of months.
I think it's wonderful when we can recognize that what is, in my mind's view, a natural law of what you're able to give to others. And the more that this is refined, the more readily it'll be done with less strain on you physiologically.
Thank you.
And that is very, very important. People don't realize how significant that really is. So
keep on
taking care of yourself.
Okay.
It works.
I thank you in honor of you and your spirit friends for assisting me today.
It's been my pleasure. I appreciate your calling in.
Thank you, and you have a great afternoon.
Thank you. You too, my dear. This
Bye-bye.
Is Donna Sebo. My goodness, we have got about a minute, maybe a minute and a half left, and I wanted to quickly, I won't be able to take any more phone calls, but I'll be around tomorrow, which, by the way, we are going to be talking with Timothy Bellavia. We're all the same inside. Wonderful man, wonderful, wonderful stories about children that we're going to be hearing tomorrow. Remember I was talking about Jerry earlier? Well, remember I told you Jerry had gone back to this coffee shop, and he was here seeing all this commotion at the counter, customers bickering at the pastry kiosk, a woman, her purse falls open, and everything comes out of it as it's falling to the floor. and she had a little kid with her. The toddler's beginning to scream. Well, Jerry absolutely said, whoa, I don't need to go to this place. However, he accidentally bumped into a man coming in, and the guy was just nasty. Watch out where you're going. And Jerry said, you know what? I don't think I want to be here this morning. So he goes away. However, Jerry was a creature of habit. And he went to the same store the next day, decided to take his paper and get his morning coffee. But you know what? This time he sort of poked his head through the doorway to see what the mood with the customer was. And there was a new customer at the cashier. She was smiling. She said, good morning. I just put on a fresh cup pot of coffee. He said, wow, I like this. And she said, just doesn't it smell good? He said, yeah, that smells good. And she said, will that be all for you today? And he said, yeah. And she said, well, that's going to cost you $25. And he reached into his pocket. He was so happy with her attitude. And she said, aha, I gotcha. $25 for a cup of coffee. Don't you think that's a bit much? Anyway, Jerry was so happy with his gal's good sense of humor. And he said, you know what? You really made my day. She said, there's a smile I was looking for. Handed him his newspaper. She said, you go on and have a good day. And he said, you too. And you know what? He said, this was going to be a great day. Don't ever think that your attitude doesn't make a difference. It does. This is Donna Sebo. We're out of time for today. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Go get 'em, Tiger. It's a good day to be alive. Talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.